Tiger is back on the prowl. Tiger Woods making his PGA Tour season debut at his tournament, the Genesis Invitational. What should we expect from Tiger as he tries to finally win his hometown event? It was exciting. Taylor was there. It went beyond regulation. No, not the Super Bowl. I'm talking the WM Phoenix Open, where Nick Taylor wins in a playoff. We look back on his birdie barrage down the stretch. Plus, it's called the greatest show on grass, but has the partying crossed the line in the WM Phoenix Open? Players have run-ins with fans and security is on high alert. We talk that and much more next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hi there, thanks for teaming up with us here on this Monday, February the 12th. It is Golf Today. I am Todd Lewis, and I'm proud to be sitting beside our friend Rex Hoggard. We promise to entertain and inform you over the next couple of hours. And Rex, what a Sunday we have. I want to take you back to around 5:30 Eastern time. The WM Phoenix Open is winding down. The Super Bowl is about to kick off. Where are you? What are you doing?
Laying in my bed in the hotel, and I have to be honest with you, this was like TV gymnastics, trying to bounce back and forth, because the way the timing should have worked out, had we not had all the delays, the Phoenix Open should have been over long before the Super Bowl teed off at 6:30 Eastern time. It didn't work out that way. They went late. There was a playoff. There was a lot of things going on. I don't know about you, but the second screen had my head spinning. The ADD kicked in a little bit. I had a hard time focusing.
The party animal laying in bed in his hotel.
That's true.
Were you under the weather?
A little bit. Feeling better now, though. It's fine. Appreciate you.
He's fighting. Thank you very much. We're gonna make sure he gets through this show, okay? All right, we're officially on Tiger Watch this Monday as Genesis Invitational Tournament host Tiger Woods is expected to make his season debut this week. He's welcoming an elite field to Riviera Country Club for this signature event on the PGA Tour. What should we expect from Tiger? Good question. Well, let's go back to what he did last year. Of course, he did tee it up at the Masters. He did not finish, though. If you remember, he withdrew because of his ankle issue. He did make the cut at the Genesis last year. Had ankle fusion surgery after the Masters, came back. His first tournament after that surgery, the Hero World Challenge. Not an official PGA Tour event, but some elite players there. Not top 20 players in the field. He finished 18th. PNC Championship, he was teaming up with his son Charlie, finished tied for fifth. All right. Tiger Woods, it's always exciting when Tiger makes a start, but when he makes his season debut, we always ask the question, is Tiger going to win? Is he going to get his 83rd PGA Tour victory, break the all-time record? Is he going to be, you know, setting the tone for what could be an incredible season for Tiger Woods? What do you think we should expect from Tiger?
It's next chapter. Whatever it is he tweeted, he did that about 2 weeks ago, and it was a little cryptic, but this is the next chapter for Tiger Woods, and I've kind of stopped putting numbers on it. It was 2.0 at one point, and it's 3.0. I'm not even quite sure what version we're at right now. I will say this. You mentioned 83 this morning in our meeting when we were talking about this, and I have to be honest with you, it stunned me a little bit. It's not as though I don't believe he can win that 83 PGA Tour title and take the record and become, I would say at that point, the GOAT, the greatest of all time. We can sit and have that conversation about Jack Nicklaus. I don't know if he can do it based on his schedule right now. You and I have had this conversation a lot. Riviera is a really, really tough walk. It's a really, really hard golf course. And now, as a signature event, it's going to be a really, really good field. He's picking the toughest venues against the toughest fields to go out and try to get that 83rd victory. It's going to be a good litmus test. Last time we saw him was at the PNC. You and I were both there in Orlando. Before that, I think the Hero World Challenge was probably a better test of exactly what his game was like. But this brings it up a level. It's a tough walk. It's a tough golf course.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if he played, let's say hypothetically, the Sony Open, if he went to Hawaii and played what is considered the flattest golf course on the planet, he's never played the Sony, by the way, and he gets 83 there, just think how great that would be. I make this comparison all the time. LeBron James is the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. When did he cross that threshold? It wasn't in a playoff game. It wasn't against the Celtics. No, it was against the Detroit Pistons. And I say that because it doesn't really matter where the venue is. When you make the accomplishment, you make the accomplishment. But still, let's talk about this week and what we should expect from Tiger Woods with his golf swing. You and I both were at the Hero World Challenge, and we saw a little different Tiger Woods. If you look at his swing here, because of that ankle and leg injury that he has, it's his right leg, by the way, doesn't really have a lot of push off that leg with his swing. I'm not the swing expert, but I'll play diet Brandon Chamblee here. But you can tell through his torso, a lot of that energy is created, and he is strong from his waist up, very muscular right now.
Can we just put that on a loop? I just want that on my screensaver as a loop, because that is a beautiful golf swing. And you're right, I don't want to put my Brandon Chamblee hat on. But I remember talking with his trainer during that practice round at the Hero World Challenge, and you and I were having the conversation about it seems as if he was using his upper body more, and his trainer says it's kind of by design, that he's sort of limited in what he can do with his lower body now. If we started stacking swings up, all the different versions that I just mentioned, it's been a lot of lower body until recent years, and now he's using a lot of upper body to try to generate that speed. Now, the interesting thing is I think it's made him more consistent, especially off the tee. So to your point, you're right. A Sony Open, a Hilton Head, a Colonial, all of those would be a perfect fit for him now, but that's not in the cards, apparently.
But if he contends, and if he wins, I mean, this is a big hypothetical. If he wins the Genesis at Riviera, he's never won at Riviera. He grew up an hour away, and he gets number 83. Oh, what kind of story would that be?
I'm with you on that one, and you and I both
won. Don't Debbie Downer me.
I'm not. But you pointed out the obvious thing on this. He's never won here before. He hasn't even played particularly well. He's got a couple top 10 finishes. That was back in the 90s. I think his best finish since he kind of took over as the host is a tied for 15th. It's just not a place, as I mentioned, really, really tough golf course. More importantly, really, really difficult walk. You and I have tried to make our way up and down that hill from 18th to the clubhouse. It's not easy for us, and we haven't had all of those surgeries.
Right, but after that walk, though, once you get down from the clubhouse, it's not that bad.
If you're falling down the hill.
By the way, Tiger is expected to have a big announcement today, 4 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Eastern time. We believe it's going to be the unveiling of his new brand. Of course, he left Nike last year and no longer with that company. What will Tiger look like when he tees it up this week at Riviera? All right, we're just getting started on this Monday. Coming up, the party got a little out of hand in the desert this weekend as fans and players got into it at the WM Phoenix Open. Are fans crossing the line? Talk to Chance Cosby, who is the executive director of the Thunderbirds that runs this event, coming up in just a moment. It is some kind of party at the WM Phoenix Open. Famed 16th hole producing some quality people watching. You just enjoy yourself. You know, my daughter, who's turning 8 today, saw this and said, look at that puppy, Daddy.
Happy birthday to her. That's an 8th birthday is a big one. I said this on the podcast last week, and I was amazed at the reviews on social media that I got. I said it was a bucket list trip, and by that, I mean that there's nothing else in golf like this. Like, the Ryder Cup can get very, very rowdy. You pointed out, we talked about Beth Page. Going to be the host of the Ryder Cup next year. That's going to be a scene, but I don't think anything compares to what we see here. And it has everything to do with what the Thunderbirds have built. It has to do with this community. It has to do with this golf course. When you look at how crazy things get, now sometimes things get a little bit too crazy.
Yeah, it's got a little crazy, a little out of hand. Saturday around 2 p.m., the tournament had to shut down alcohol sales, did not allow fans on the premises. Saw some people cross inside the ropes and get a little bit under control finally. And we'll talk a little more about the tournament and everything that it does in a positive way and kind of get into what we may see in the forms of changes in the coming years. We welcome in Chance Cosby, who's the executive director of the Thunderbirds. Chance, thanks so much for talking to us. I know you and the Thunderbirds do so much for the community and charity and everything. As you look back on this year's edition of the WM Phoenix Open, what are your takeaways?
Good morning, Todd. Good morning, Rex. Thank you for having me on the show. It was a challenging week. We had a great Sunday with a great champion and a great playoff with Nick and Charlie Hoffman, and so we ended on a very positive note. But the week really started in a tough way when you think of what kind of led to what happened on Saturday. You know, we don't get a lot of rain in Arizona. I think we get about 6 inches a year. And we got significant rain on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then ultimately Saturday morning. And when you think of TPC Scottsdale, it's a stadium golf course. It's built for the WM Phoenix Open. And our fans, when you go to a normal WM Phoenix Open, they're enjoying the entire property. And they were not able to do that this year. It was muddy. So many areas on the golf course were simply unusable. And what that led to is our fans ended up moving to more of our concrete paved areas, and really created significant congestion to where ultimately on Saturday, you know, we didn't do anything different from a ticketing or fan perspective as we've done in years past. But since areas of the golf course were not usable, the decision was made by our security partners and our team to close the front gate, to close the concession stands, to close alcohol sales. We opened up all of our security blowouts on the entire course to safely remove our fans from the course and get everything back under control and try to get through that Saturday, which was a very tough day.
Now, Chance, we're going to break this down, and I'm sure it's already been done quite a bit, but how do you walk that fine line from being the event that the WM Phoenix Open is, which is half a golf tournament, half a party, to letting it get to what you just talked about it became on Saturday?
Well, we're going to make changes. I think everybody probably agrees that, you know, we have a very unique culture of our event, and we've been doing this for 89 years. The Thunderbirds were founded in 1937. This was our 89th plane, and I don't think any of us dreamed that it would grow to this level of attendance and excitement. But the fine line was really when we felt like we were just at a point on Saturday where our fans could not move around the golf course. And at that moment, the right thing to do was to take the steps that we did. When you look at our course, we have a really big paved road that we call our Hall Road that really runs to the right side of 18 and to the right side of 17 behind all of our hospitality structures. And that was the point in time that the flow of people simply could not flow. And we knew that we need to make an operational decision at that point to get people off the golf course, simply for the safety of the event, the safety of the players, the safety of our fans. And that was the decision that we made. And, you know, and it was the right decision.
Chance, I know it's just the day after this tournament ended, and you just said you're going to make changes for next year. Do those changes right now start with setup? Does it start with more security? You tell me.
I think that we'll find out. I will tell you that, you know, we spent 5 or 6 hours on Saturday afternoon as the course was steadily flowing outward. You know, we sat as a leadership team. And evaluated just kind of brainstorming what our next steps are. I mean, there's no time off. We've got 365 days to fix this. So I think that you will see a complete operational change of how we manage really our Friday and Saturday, but the entire week. I mean, we're very proud of what we've built. You know, we've been tournament of the year on the PGA Tour 5 of the last 7 years, but we don't like what happened on Saturday. The players don't like what happened on Saturday. Our fans don't like what happened on Saturday. And so nothing is off the table. You know, we're going to look at our just general admission ticket exposure, and how many are out in the marketplace. We're going to look at our complete security plan. And just how we operate. I think it's a Saturday at the WM Phoenix Open in 2024 is going to end up being a turning point for our tournament and our organization to make our event better. We learned so much, and we know that we have to make improvements. We owe it to our fans. We owe it to the PGA Tour players that come and support this event, and we will. We're not going to let this happen again for all these reasons.
Chance, you've been around the PGA Tour for a long time. You've been around players for a long time. What would be your message to the players right now?
I think the message to the players, I was at Ping Golf for 20 years, and I've been running this tournament for 5. And I think the message to the players is that you can count on the Thunderbirds to get this right. You know, we know that you've come and you've supported our event, and the 16th hole is really unlike anything else in golf. And we acknowledge we did not have a good Saturday, and we are committed to making the experience at the WM Phoenix Open better for you, for your families, for our fans, for our volunteers. And, you know, we've had a lot of challenges over our 89 years, and we have never been, we're not going to rest on our laurels. We will be humble, and we will make changes, and we will make this right.
Chance, I really do appreciate you coming on and joining us just the day after the tournament. And it sounds like you and the Thunderbirds are willing to make some changes to better that event and the safety and security of everyone on the grounds there, including the players. Thanks a lot. We wish you all the best, and we'll be talking to you soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
All right, that's Chance Cosby, who's the executive director of the Thunderbirds. And it's an interesting question that you pointed out. You want this to be a fun sporting experience, and the fact that, yes, there will be some alcohol sold. Yes, there is excitement there. You're outside. You're with your friends. But at the same time, there is that line that some, that's a minority, by the way, not a majority of fans, some do cross. And how do you manage that and still keep that party atmosphere going?
I'm so glad we were able to have Chance on, because look, this is his tournament. He's been around it his entire life, even before he was at Ping Golf. He understands it. He lives it. And he knows that what happened Saturday probably doesn't need to happen again. So I will give he and the Thunderbirds just a monsoon of credit. True. All that being said, you and I probably had the most heated debate we've ever had in our careers together earlier this morning talking about this, because I have kind of gone the other way. And I remember having this conversation vividly after the ride up at Medina not that long ago, because players did not like the atmosphere there. It was very loud. It was very rowdy. There was a lot of drinking going on, very, very similar. And my argument then and my argument now is, if golf wants to be a mainstream sport, this is what mainstream sports look like. Sometimes it's not pretty. Sometimes nice things are not said, and sometimes you're just going to have to bite your lip and walk away. And in this particular case, I think a lot of players felt like it had gone over the top, and maybe it did. But my argument is always going to be, we have spent the last 3 years talking in every corner about how we can grow the game, how we can bring new people to the game, and how we move into that mainstream. How we do it is what the Thunderbirds have created there. Now, are there things that they can change? Certainly. Are there things that they need to do on Saturday to make sure that, is that guy drinking out of his shoe?
Yeah.
Well, we probably don't want that to happen.
But why not? He's a young guy.
I'm on the other side of the fence when it comes to this, and I actually kind of all people, I got into a conversation with my son, who's a 21-year-old kid that would probably be drinking out of his shoe right now if he had the option, but he felt like it was over the top. I don't.
Well, look, I do agree with what you're saying in some aspects. I do think in order for this sport to thrive, you have to have a conveyor belt of new fans, which includes, of course, younger fans. But just as much as we saw last night in the Super Bowl, when someone ran onto the field and took off his shirt, that's a no-no. You get tackled, you get taken off. And I feel like that happens quite often. Screaming in players' backswings. I mean, if you're going to make the comparison to the other mainstream sports, when you watch Duke play North Carolina, the Cameron Crazies are behind the backboard, screaming at the Tar Heel player, waving their arms, trying to distract him. Does that need to happen in golf, too? If you're rooting for Charlie Hoffman, do you scream in Nick Taylor's backswing? That's what they do in mainstream sports. No, I don't think you do. I think that you can go out and have a great time, and if you want to have, you know, a few more drinks than you normally, okay. But you have to have the consciousness to know that you can't do certain things, and security needs to take care of you.
I'm not going to argue with you. I guess my main question to you is, how much would I have to pay you to drink a beverage, whatever beverage you want, out of your shoe?
That is an amazing pivot. It would be at least four figures. At least four figures.
Your shoe must be very dirty. Stick around. We got plenty more coming up on Golf Today. Nick Taylor put on quite the display Sunday evening at the WM Phoenix Open. The putter was hot. What is the ceiling for the Canadian? We discussed Golf Today Roundtable next. Time now for the round table. We are joined by our Paige McKenzie and Steve Sands, who are both on site at the WM Phoenix Open. And Steven, I'm going to go ahead and start with you. I think you're back home in Orlando. You just heard that sound from Billy Horschel and Zach Johnson. What are your thoughts?
You know, Rex, I've seen that video a couple of times. I don't think athletes should be engaging with fans in that regard. It's not the Malice at the Palace with the Pistons years ago. It's not hockey guys going into the stands. It's nothing like that. But I love Zach and I love Billy. They're pros. They've been around the tour a long, long time. They're fan favorites. They're favorites amongst their peers. but I don't think you should be talking that way to the paying customers. I understand the theory and the conversation you guys had with Chance a little bit earlier, and you two guys having your disagreement back and forth as to what fan engagement should be like at the WM Phoenix Open. But to me, athletes in any sport doing that to the paying customers, I just don't think that's a great look.
All right, well, let's ask somebody who's been inside the ropes and played on a great tour in Paige McKenzie. Paige, I'm guessing you tell me that you may have heard some barbs from outside the ropes. What should athletes, what should players do if they get attacked like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the utopia of what players should do. Certainly, players should make every 2.5-foot putt. They don't. Should players engage with drunk fans? No. But is it reasonable to assume that you should be able to do your job without people yelling in the middle of swings? Yeah, I think it is. So am I upset that Billy Horschel and Zach Johnson bit back? No, I'm not, because given the same situation, I may have had the same attitude. No one wants to be the sober guy at the party, and that's what the players ultimately end up being. And that's no fun when they're rude and they're inconsiderate and they're not holding up their end of the bargain in being a spectator. I think it's a contract. It goes both ways. You buy a ticket, there should be a decorum that goes along with it.
Now, Paige, this event means a lot to you. This is your hometown event, essentially. You just heard us talk with Chance Cosby. He's talking about how he walks that balance between keeping what the WM Phoenix Open is, keeping it special, and making sure this doesn't happen again. How does he do that?
I think that's a tough line to walk. I am not envious of anybody trying to run this golf tournament and making everybody happy. I do think the messaging could help in the coming years and making it known that it truly is a golf tournament too. It's not just a party. I mean, I listen to the radio station all week, and it's all about what's going to be on your hashtag Instagram bingo card. How many people are you going to see arrested or drunk or passed out? It's the messaging is so much about the party and much less about the fact that there are professionals trying to get a job done and being respectful in those moments while people are trying to hit. So I think you could, you know, that could be part of the messaging moving forward, talking to the local media outlets, making sure that that's part of it moving forward. But I don't envy Chance or the Thunderbirds in trying to come up with that balance of making sure it's a fun environment and that people can want to continue to go and fill the stands, as well as making sure that the players are happy and respected while they're trying to do their job.
Yeah, you want to bring your kids to this tournament, too. I mean, there's something to think about there. Let's pivot a bit. Steve, I know you were on the call there. I mean, what an exciting tournament. Nick Taylor birdies 5 of his last 6 holes to win. Second win in roughly 8 months from Nick Taylor. Of course, that big win that we talked about in Canada. What should we expect from Nick Taylor moving forward, given that he's 35 years of age and seems to be a little bit of a late bloomer?
By the way, can I just clear something up with the last segment? When
sure.
Paige said that you don't want to be the only sober person at the party, Rex, the answer to the question is I would take $5 from you to drink a beer out of my shoe. I wouldn't need 4 figures like Todd. Todd's a much fancier guy. I'd be more than happy to drink for $5. I'd do it for $1 probably. You know, I think Nick Taylor, Todd, that putt he made, now obviously when you make a 72-foot putt to end a 69-year drought in Canada and Pat Fletcher in 1954 and the whole country's going crazy, I think it's easy to get excited about that. But what that proved to me and what yesterday proved backing up Nick Taylor, he's a baller, man. That guy can play. And he's not afraid of the moment. He is clutch. And I think that winning breeds winning in all sports, but especially in this sport. And he's 35. He's not 25. I think he's kind of learned himself, kind of gathered his game a little bit. And I think that win last summer in Canada has propelled him to be a much, much better player, especially closing. He was money yesterday, man. I mean, he was really, really strong coming down the stretch in difficult conditions with all that pressure. I think Nick Taylor's on the rise, Todd. I think his game is really, really strong and can match up with any golf course. There is no place that he can't perform well.
Paige, along those lines, I think we all sort of watched Scottie Scheffler coming down the stretch yesterday. It looked like at one point that might have been his tournament to win. What did you see, and what do you think going forward from this point he needs to work on the most?
I got so excited watching him come down the stretch. I mean, I had breakdowns ready for post-game. His drive on 11, his drive on 13 were spectacular, best in the field. I felt like, okay, this is the area of the golf course. He's going to make his final charge. So many scoring opportunities between 13 and 18. And the missed putts on 13 and 14 were ultimately what did him in. I think pre-game, I was talking about how he was struggling between 5 and 10 feet. Not just this week, but for the season. Heading into the final day, he was sitting 54th in the field of over 70. He's 98th in that category coming into this week. And ultimately, it was those two missed putts between 5 and 10 feet that did him in. Now, if you look at his strokes gained putting, it's going to look okay. That's because he can drain putts. This is not a bad putter. It just appears that in that distance, he maybe gets a little bit tight, that he's doing something else in his stroke that's not allowing it to flow freely. So I think if he can clean that up, relax enough to let the putter swing in the way that it's supposed to, in the way that it does at longer distances, the ones that he did make, I mean, there's no stopping what Scottie Scheffler can do from the tee through the fairway to the green. It's just a matter of cleaning that portion up. And to me, it's maybe more mental than physical if that's the only area that it's popping up in.
Yeah, it continues to work with Phil Kenton. And the belief comes and goes, it seems like, on the greens with Scottie Scheffler. Speaking of belief, Steve, how much belief do you have in Tiger Woods as he tees it up this week at the Genesis Invitational?
It's so hard to tell. For all these years, we've talked about Tiger and Riviera, how they don't match up. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to play Riviera on a regular basis because it's his, it benefits the TGR Foundation. And also, it's a big-time event. It's his own event. And he hasn't played in a couple months. I don't know. I mean, it'd be great if he made the cut and then somehow, you know, wiggled his way onto a leaderboard on Saturday. I think it's a tall ask and tall task. To expect him to contend against the best players in the world. It's a great, great field. Can't wait to get out there. We'll be out there all week long. And it's going to be amazing to see him back out there competing again on the PGA Tour. What has it been since the Masters? We saw him at the PNC. We saw him at the Hero World Challenge, but a full field, you know, regular PGA Tour event. It's been a long, long time. So I don't know. I'd like to see how his body and his game match up. I know his game is sharp when he's working on it, but he hasn't played in a couple months. And I know that the body needs to make sure that it gets through 4 days, maybe even five if you include the Pro-Am on Wednesday. So we'll have to wait and see. But let's make the cut and then see how it goes the final 36 holes. I would say that it's ridiculous to say that the goal is to make the cut for Tiger Woods. That's absurd. But let's make the cut and then see how he reacts game and body-wise over the weekend.
Paige, Todd and I tried to break down Tiger's swing, this version of Tiger's swing, earlier in the show. I'd be curious, what do you see in whatever version this is, 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, whatever it might be?
Yeah, we've had many renditions. I think you guys nailed it. I mean, you were talking about the lack of being able to push off on the right foot as he goes through impact. Certainly that has changed. I think the back fusion has made a huge difference over the course of the last, you know, 5 or 6 years as well. He's done an incredible job of continuing to adapt. I've always been a big believer that your body moves along the path of least resistance. So if you want to change your swing, make sure you change your body. And of course, if your body changes, then the swing will have to adjust as well. And that's why he doesn't look the same way that he does. And if you look back at his swings in the year 2000, he's got a different build now, and he's certainly got more restrictions. Mm.
Steve, we have been friends for 25 years. And when you're telling me that you would drink out of a shoe for a dollar, well, let me just tell you, I got 10 of them right here. And the next time I see you, since I've never seen you drink out of anything but a glass, I'll be happy to pay to watch it happen.
Wait, hold on a second. We've drank out of bottles before, not just glasses. Come on now.
That's not a shoe. Paige's, I don't wear bottles on my feet.
You know, if you're going to hang with Paige McKenzie after doing a live from at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, you better pony up. I can tell you that.
All right, well, maybe he's going to drink
out of
Paige's shoe. Is that what he said?
I'm out of the glass.
I don't know where that was going. Thank both of you. Appreciate you having
me
on.
Into this.
Can't wait, guys.
See I'll ya. See you with your shoes on, Todd.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Tiger Woods returns this week at Riviera, and one player who knows his way around Los Angeles gym is Hal Sutton, the winner of 1983 PGA Championship. He's next. You won't want to miss him.
Golf Today.
Hi there, we welcome you back to Golf Today. I'm Todd Lewis, proud to be sitting beside Rex Hoggard on this Monday, February the 12th. We are moving from the desert in Arizona to La La Land, Pacific Palisades. It is Riviera. It is the Genesis Invitational hosted by Tiger Woods, who will be teeing it up this week. He's making his PGA Tour season debut here at Riviera.
I think it'll be interesting. Again, we go back to the idea that he's never played this course particularly well, but I got out of the Tiger Woods doubting business a long time ago. We talked this morning about the significance of him trying to get that 83rd win. I'm with you on the Cinderella story. I'm with you 100% on the idea of him being able to do it in Los Angeles, not far from Cypress, where he grew up with the posters and all of the numbers on his bedroom room. I just think it would be a fantastic story.
Yeah, it would be an incredible story. I mean, it'd be one of the best stories maybe in sports. Definitely could be the biggest story in golf this year if Tiger's able to win at Riviera. Of course, if he wins a major championship, that's going to be huge as well. But given the fact that he has, you know, played in a while, he hasn't made an official PGA Tour start since the Masters, there's always that mystery. What's Tiger going to be like? And every time I expect him to play well, I shouldn't say every time. There have been times when I've expected him to play well and he doesn't. And there have been times when I'm like, if he makes the cut, that'd be okay. He goes on and performs well. I remember being at the Zozo in Japan. In 2019, I flew all the way to Japan.
We flew all the way to Japan.
Oh, that's right. You were there, too. I'm sorry. We didn't fly together. I was in coach. He was in first class. And there he was winning that tournament to get 82. Did not expect that to happen. Made himself a captain's pick for the President's Cup team that he was the captain of. I didn't expect that to happen, and he goes on and does it.
We keep talking about him catching lightning in a bottle at this point in his career. We've gone over and over again the limitations that he has with his body, with his swing now. There's certain things. All the stars are going to have to align. Everything's going to have to be perfect. It's probably going to have to be a warm week. I would imagine it's going to have to be one of those weeks that it's on a flat golf course. However, Riviera is neither one of those things. I do see the sense it would be a script that they wouldn't write in La La Land, to your point, because I think it's so out of the realm of possibility. But, man, it would be unbelievably good to be able to sit and celebrate, having been there in Zozo with you in Japan. In retrospect, you're right. I didn't have very high expectations going into that week, and you always think in the back of your mind, maybe this is the week.
See, I don't think he has physical challenges as much as you think. And this golf course, I think the rust is going to be the biggest issue, the competitive rust. We saw that at Hero. He talked about it. I just haven't played a lot competitively. I can jump in a cart back home in South Florida in Jupiter and ride around and play all you want. But when you get out there against the world's best, you know, as hard as this may sound for some to believe, belief, even for Tiger Woods, can be very fragile when you haven't played a lot. And so I think that's going to be the bigger issue more than the physical limitations.
And he doesn't know what he's going to get.
Doesn't know. We know. I mean, how's he done at the Genesis Invitational at Riviera? Well, let's not forget when he started his career, but his very first start on the PGA Tour was there at this event at Riviera when he was just a teenager. He's had 14 starts, one runner-up finish, and he's never won. Hard to believe that Tiger Woods has never won here at Riviera.
Now, keep in mind, he also took a pretty lengthy break. There was a period of his career when he did not play Riviera very much for the reasons that we're probably talking about. For whatever reason, it just didn't fit his game at the time. I just think one of the things that you've looked at over the course of his career is he's gravitated toward golf courses where he feels comfortable. You have to question if he feels comfortable on this golf course. One guy who was comfortable on this golf course was Hal Sutton. Here he is at the 1983 PGA Championship held at Riviera. Ends up winning by one stroke. Held off Jack Nicklaus. Overcame three consecutive bogeys late on the back nine to get that one-stroke victory. I don't think anybody knows how to play that golf course better than Hal. You see the 14-time PGA Tour winner went wire with wire at that 83 PGA Championship. He actually won the money list in 83 as well, competed in four Ryder Cups, and he was the 2007 Payne Stewart Award winner. I'd like to welcome Hal Hal Sutton to the show right now. Hal, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start at Riviera. I don't think anybody knows that course better than you have. I would be curious, we talk about this every year. How has that golf course been able to stand up to the test of time?
Well, it's just a great test. You know, you got to drive it well there. It's a second shot golf course in a lot of ways. Every hole stands out. Probably the easiest hole on the golf course is the first hole, so you better get it. And, you know, it's got no water on it. I don't know how many people out there know that, but there's very few great golf courses that have no water on it. So just a great course.
Hal, I want to go back to 1983. At your last start prior to the PGA Championship, you had a six-shot lead after 54 holes in Virginia, and you ended up in that final day shooting a 77, and you lost the tournament. Your next start, you come back, the PGA Championship, you got Jack Nicklaus breathing down your neck on the final day. How were you able to mentally overcome and forget about what happened in your last start to hoist the Wanamaker Trophy?
Well, I don't think I forgot about it. I think it just fueled the determination that I'd never let that happen again, because that was an awfully embarrassing day. I beat myself. You know, Calvin Pete, the great Calvin Pete, he was a great player. He won that day, but it wasn't because he shot real low. It was because I shot so high. And you don't forget a day like that. It embarrassed me and fueled the determination that I took to Riviera.
I want to go back to that final round. Three consecutive bogeys late on the back nine. What kind of pep talk did you give yourself or from your caddy? How did you snap out of that?
Well, I bogeyed 12 and 13 and then 14, the par three. But 12 and 13 are difficult holes, and that could happen to anybody. And, you know, but when I bogeyed 14, it was three in a row. I had a four-shot lead, and all of a sudden one shot. And, of course, I had flashback from the 2 weeks prior to that, you know, and I remember I took the towel, put my head in it, and said, you cannot let this define who you are. You have to reach inside and pull something out, and let's get it into the clubhouse. And, you know, I ended up telling myself I can only do something about one shot at a time, so let's just drive it in the fairway 15. And then I approached the second shot. Let's just get it on the green. And that's the way I played all the way in. And, you know, it's a tough enough golf course. The pars worked well. I didn't need to make any birdies. So, you know, I was able to get it in.
Mm. And also, it was interesting back in 1983, from what I understand, it's the first major championship to award a six-figure check, $100,000. By the way, at the Pebble Beach, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, if you finished outside the top 30, you still made $100,000. Money is a big topic on the world right now, stage in regards to players. What do you think about today's players, modern players today? What do you think their major motivation is? Is it money or championships?
That's a loaded question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. It appears that money is everything, but I was a golfer, and I know that, you know, all I cared about was trying to establish myself as a great player. And I knew I had to win tournaments in order to do that. Nobody sees your bank account, so they don't know how much money you got. But in the world we live in today, they've changed the complexion of golf so much that I'm not sure I'm a guy that can answer that question.
Let me try this from a different angle then. Are you comfortable with the idea of the game is moving more and more towards money, whether that's the PGA Tour or LIV or whatever the case may be? Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I'm not proud of what I see. Let me just say that I've stood on the 16th tee. I actually made a hole in one on 16 at Scottsdale. First one ever made there. I made it. You know, it was rowdy back in those days, and they didn't have all of this stuff. It was out of hand this last weekend. And, you know, where is golf headed? You know, what does LIV bring to the table? Entertainment? I mean, I thought the entertainment was golf and personalities in the golf. Now it's a whole lot more than that. It's not the same game that I knew.
How do you clean it up, Hal, in your opinion? What do you think should change?
Where would I start? Not sure. Oh, you know, here in Texas, I'm building a golf course right now that is totally traditional. Part of the rules is no music on the golf course. You know, we went back to a concrete head in the middle of the fairway for the 100-yard, the 150-yard, and the 200-yard marker. I think there's enough people in the world that like the past, would like to be part of the past. So we're going to find out if that is right or wrong. Who knows? You know, I'd like to go back. I think the cell phone has ruined a lot of people. I'm on it right now talking to you. But opinion, judgment, and everything else, it's out of hand what's going on in the world right now.
All right, I'm going to steer away from the politics of the day and go back to a golf course. You said you're building a golf course right now. I love the 10th hole at Riviera, but would you build that hole if you were designing a golf course right now?
I built two of them. That's how So I love holes that create excitement like that and make you make a decision, whether you you take the risk or whether you, you know, lay up. And I think drivable par fours are a big part of the game. I really like them.
Final thing, Hal, you stared down Tiger Woods and beat him at Sawgrass. Who can forget Be the Right Club today? Tiger Woods now is closer to 50 than he is at 40. He's gone through a lot with his body. If Tiger Woods puts himself in contention this week at Riviera, not too far from where he grew up, how would you describe the atmosphere, not only on the grounds, but in the sports world and maybe even crossing the lines into pop culture? What would that do for the game?
Well, I think it would be really big for the game, but I think that's awfully lofty expectations, considering he's played as little as he has. He's been through everything that he has. In my opinion, he's the greatest player that ever lived. You know, I love Jack Nicklaus and really appreciate everything that he did. He was my idol. But Tiger's the only guy that I saw that never feared the next shot, no matter where it went. He knew he had the shot. But I think there's a lot of lofty expectations to think that he might be in contention. You know, I'd love to see it myself. I'm a big Tiger Woods fan. But I think creating correct expectations. If he makes the cut, I mean, Riviera's not the easiest golf course in the world to walk, and he's got leg problems and foot problems. So if he makes the cut, then he's got to play four rounds in a row. And I think that'd be pretty tough.
Hal, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy the warm weather in Houston.
Hope so, too. I think I just lost you. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's the great Hal Sutton, of course, a players' champion, major champion. It's good to get his thoughts on not only his victory at Riviera, but Tiger Woods and what he thinks the state of the game is like. Stay with us as we continue here on Golf Today.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. It was the big news that was announced last week as Tiger Woods plans to tee it up in this week's Genesis Invitational. You can catch live first round coverage Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel.
Founded in 1996, the TGR Foundation, led by Tiger Woods, has supported students on their journey to connect passion with purpose as they learn, grow, and thrive. Since its beginning, the foundation has reached more than 2 million students from around the world through initiatives like the Earl Woods Scholar Program. A little more on this foundation. It started again in 1996 by Tiger and his parents. It began with junior golf initiatives, and it creates and supports community-based programs pioneering STEM education, positive youth development. Hero World Challenge PGA Tour Tournament annually is an annual fundraising event. And it serves as a charitable beneficiary of Genesis Invitational as well. And to discuss further the great work of the TGR Foundation is CEO Cindy Court, who oversees all aspects of TGR Foundation's programs, partnerships, and outreach. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us. If you had to describe what the foundation, the TGR Foundation, is all about, what would you say?
Well, I would start with Tiger's vision for the foundation and the work that we do through our TGR Learning Labs. And Tiger wanted to create a safe and inspiring place where young people could explore new ideas, concepts, careers that they didn't know anything about, where they could learn and develop skills from hands-on experiences and curriculum, and eventually create a plan for their future that allows them to successfully pursue those passions. And he started here in Anaheim, where he grew up.
How does TGR Foundation drive meaningful impact in the lives of youth?
Yeah, again, first and foremost, having a safe place is critical for the young people that we serve in under-resourced communities. It's where students can be excited and encouraged and supported by professional full-time staff, mentors. That's where we provide year-round programming. We have classes that happen during the day, which is a big differential for a lot of youth-serving organizations. And then we provide classes after school and all summer long, where a lot of students struggle with summer learning loss. And we provide the programs in three key areas: STEAM enrichment, health and well-being, and college and career readiness.
Where is the TGR Learning Lab expanding to, and why do you think it's important to deliver programming into these communities?
Yeah, we're very excited that in 2026 we'll open up the doors in West Philadelphia with our Philadelphia Learning Lab on the Cobbs Creek golf course. And then in 2026, we'll open up the doors in Los Angeles at a campus called Lulu's Place, which is a partnership with the USTA and the Kimmelman Family Foundation.
Cindy, why is STEM so important to youth?
Yeah, well, you know from research that a lot of the professions that are coming in the future and that will be sustainable for many, many years to come will be in this STEAM area: science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math. And we want to ensure that our young people have the content knowledge, the skills, and sometimes most importantly, the confidence to enter this field. We also know from a national assessment of educational progress that there's some pretty staggering statistics. 79% of our schools don't have any lab space. Our learning lab is state-of-the-art, inspiring lab space. 23% of students are getting less than 2 hours of science instruction every week. And only 41% of our students report high levels of confidence in their math skills. We can, and we do, and we need to change those statistics.
Cindy, finally, I had a chance to talk to Tiger over the years about the TGR Foundation, and he said that it gives him a sense of pride, as much as he's done on the golf course, the TGR Foundation, in getting these kids through these programs, getting them off to college, and being successful in society. How much pride do you and your fellow foundation members have in seeing these kids thrive after going through your foundation there?
Well, most of us are in it because we are educators, we're youth development professionals. I am not a very good golfer, but I bring the expertise in the classroom with young people. And truthfully, every community in America needs a TGR Learning Lab. And Tiger really believes that if people will join him together, we can empower more young people to pursue their passions through education. And honestly, that has the power to positively shape the trajectory of lives. So I would encourage everyone to go to tgrfoundation.org, learn more, figure out how you can engage with us. And honestly, we know that after school programs are critical during very critical and dangerous hours for young people. So if it's not the TGR Foundation, find an after-school program where you can help. The difference that one person can make in one life, the difference that Tiger has made in thousands and millions of lives, really do change the life of a young person.
Cindy, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations to you and the staff at TGR Foundation.
Thanks.
When Golf Today continues, the Phoenix Open is known as the People's Open, attracting some of the largest and loudest crowds in golf. But did this week's crowd get a little too rowdy? We debate next.
Roughly 500,000 fans show up at the WM Phoenix Open each and every year. This year, a little unruly at times. And on Saturday, alcohol sales were cut off mid-afternoon and fans were no longer allowed on the grounds. Chance Cosby, who's the executive director of the Thunderbirds that runs this tournament, said that changes are in the future.
Saturday at the WM Phoenix Open in 2024 is going to end up being a turning point for our tournament and our organization to make our event better. We learned so much, and we know that we have to make improvements. We owe it to our fans. We owe it to the PGA Tour players that come and support this event, and we will we're not going to let this happen again for all these reasons.
Now to expand a little more, we welcome in Cameron Cox, who is a sports anchor for News 12 in Phoenix. He's been in that market for 10 years now. Cameron, how would you describe the scene this past week at the WM Phoenix Open?
I want to first say it wasn't as bad as what social media painted the picture of, but what you saw on social media is what's going to cause this tournament to change moving forward. I have never seen the scene that we saw on Saturday. To hear a tournament that advertises itself as the biggest party in golf, and rightfully so with the crowds and the amount of people that they get every year, for them to shut down alcohol sales at that tournament just shows you how rowdy it got. I was talking to workers, people around the golf course, and everybody had the same line that they said back to me. The party just got too out of control. The party just got too wild. I thought Saturday was like a combo of just bad things that was going to happen. It was cold in the morning. It rained in the morning. The sun didn't come out till mid-morning. I thought it was a late-arriving crowd. Everybody kind of bottlenecked there because you only had one entrance. And then the golf course was still wet. I mean, they had to shut down parking lots, the main parking lots, right next to the course for the entire week. And so that just showed you how wet the grass was at times. And people were finding those wet grass spots. They were slipping there. And it was just becoming a hazard throughout the golf course. I can only imagine what the incident report was like from time to time. It was a mess at times, but it wasn't as bad as people saw on social media. But as we've all known, a few incidents like that can ruin the party for the rest of us.
Cameron, you talked about what this tournament means to that community. It's part of the fabric of that community. So how do you walk that fine line between dialing back what happened on Saturday and maintaining what this event means to the community?
Yeah, ever since I've been here, this event is what makes, I think, Arizona sports kind of unique. It's one of the more uniquely Arizona things. Every year, people look forward to it. It's become a bucket list thing in golf. So Saturday at the Phoenix Open is the second largest single-day sporting event in the country, and it's in the top 10 in the entire world. Like, that just shows you how special that Saturday is. And then the tournament itself, what they do for Arizona charities is just unbelievable. But I think what you saw this past week is there needs to be changes. There needs to be things that help this tournament evolve. It's still going to be the party. The stadium is still going to be really cool. They just have to figure out how to spread it out throughout the entire golf course. And when it rains like that, I personally think they got to close off some areas of the golf course where it doesn't become a safety hazard for people. So I think moving forward, you are going to see some changes. And I hope that means getting people throughout the entire golf course and not just on three holes right there by that one entrance.
Mm. Cameron, you were on the grounds last week, and I don't know if you had a chance to interact with players or talk to them about what the crowds were like there, how they were influencing the players, or maybe just from your observations. What were the interactions between the fans and the players?
You know, it's interesting. It's kind of the same thing every year. When the players get there, they have nothing but great things to say about the tournament, about the Thunderbirds, about the style of event they put on. They love the 16th hole. They love the party. They love the atmosphere. But it just seemed like this week, buckled with the rain, I mean, unlike kind of we have seen ever before in this tournament, to just kind of monsoon throughout a couple of days and the delays and the cold weather. And then you buckle that kind of with the attitude that happened on Saturday and kind of the things that took place. By the end of the week, I think players were kind of fed up. You kind of saw some of the reaction on social media, some videos that fans captured. The players just were not happy. People talking during players' swings that just can't happen. Players getting very frustrated. So I think everybody came into this week knowing how kind of unique and special this tournament is. By the end of the week, guys were just kind of fed up of everything else that was going on around the golf course and kind of interrupting the tournament. Listen, I get it. This tournament was always thought of to be a big party, but there is a golf tournament still happening. And I think you have to find a way to balance that line.
Was this week really a question of bad behavior, which we've talked about, or just bad luck, which you just addressed, that you got weather that you normally would not get?
You know, it was interesting. Last night, somebody asked me, was this the worst Phoenix Open of all time? And I didn't want to go that far because I thought there was some bad luck. The weather made it incredibly challenging all week long. Like I said, unlike anything I've seen before on that golf course, Saturday was just a perfect storm of events that kind of led to that transpiring afternoon when they had to close the gates for the first time. You know, people were getting turned away with tickets, where they had to stop alcohol sales. But when you look back on the entire tournament, it's still going to be something moving forward. It's still going to be a point of reference on the golf, on the PGA Tour. It's still going to be something that people can build around. So I think everything is going to be okay moving forward, but definitely there needs to be changes with the Phoenix Open.
And that's what Chance Cosby, who again is executive director of the Thunderbirds, mentioned in our interview earlier here on Golf Today. Cameron, thank you so much for your perspective. Really do appreciate you joining us here, and we'll see what happens moving forward.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Cameron Cox, who's a sports anchor in Phoenix at 12 News. And it's interesting to hear him say this, that, you know, it seemed like, although this was not a majority of the crowd, talking about the fans there at the WM Phoenix Open, that there was, you know, an instance or two that crossed the line. Actually, it's more than one or two. So we have to figure out, when I say we, I'm talking about the organizers there in the Thunderbirds, something has to be figured out on how to balance this and maintain that wonderful spirit there, that energetic party, but at the same time not cross the line.
My worry here is this a simple question of someone just having their phone on when they shouldn't have it on in the middle of the fairway, or is this more of an issue that has to do with, as we pointed out, it was raining, you had sort of a weather issue that they've never dealt with before, and yes, clearly Zach Johnson in this particular picture, and we just saw Billy Horschel. And my guess is, over the next 3 days, as we hear from players at Riviera, it's only going to get louder, players complaining about what happened last week. And I totally understand that. I can empathize with what they went through there. My concern is the tournament going to go too far? I have a lot of trust in Chance Cosby and the Thunderbirds. They've done this for a long time. They know what their DNA is. But my concern is, next year, are you going to shut down alcohol sales at noon every day? You don't want to see that either. What they've created is something very, very special, and I would hate to have an overreaction to what happened this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think there needs to be better education. I really do. I mean, when you go to the Kentucky Derby, when you go to the Brickyard 400, when you go to the NFL game, you're going to have a party atmosphere. You're going to have fans yelling it during the activities, but it just doesn't happen in golf. When players are about to hit a shot, with maybe the exception of 16 because there's white noise, hey, keep it down. Don't run onto the golf course and jump in a bunker. Don't jump into a water hazard. Just, you know, control yourself a little bit. And I think, you know, I think there should be a better education of that this is not just a party. This is not Lollapalooza. This is an actual sporting event happening.
And I tend to agree with it. And you and I think, kind of got sideways this morning when we were trying to discuss it, because your point was, what if someone yells in a player's backswing? No, because that's going to impact the competition. And that's the last thing I want and anyone else wants. If you have that element on 16, well, you do have that white noise. If it's all loud, it doesn't matter if you're being loud. So in this particular case, Scottsdale should just own it. All 18 holes should just be loud, because that's essentially what you're going to get to. We were talking about this last week on the podcast with Ryan Lavner. Essentially, you can play normally 14 holes at TPC Scottsdale in relative quiet, relative normal golf tournament coverage, because things don't get crazy until those last four holes. That seemed to be completely different this time around, and it probably had a lot to do with what we just heard.
Yeah, we shall see. You know, you learn more from things that go wrong than you do when things go right. Actually, you don't learn anything when things go right, do you?
I wouldn't think so, although, again, I will give the Thunderbirds so much credit because they have done this over and over again. Hey, look, he's got his phone.
No, I didn't have my phone on.